Hey, this is Megan McDuffie. I'm a video game composer, recording artist, and music producer. And you're listening to Hawaii's number one podcast, the Casanova Podcast. Watch your step.
Trust your fear. This wasn't written with your comfort in mind.
Nah.
Made my decision, wasn't tough to decide. Nah, me and my boys, we get it done every time. Gotta earn it, you can't just jump in the line. You'll get rushed to the side. I top my division, I've been building since I started. In the parking lot, I parked it. I came in while picking targets. My career cannot be tarnished, I'm a champion regardless. Celebrate, but this is a different kind of lucha party. We are not alike.
I don't want your advice, I don't want your opinions. It's not gonna be different from the ones I told to listen. I've been working on a bigger picture and y'all ain't impressing me. Hey, como se dice, shut your mouth, respect the legacy. Ain't no comparisons, y'all just embarrassments. All of my confidence is rooted in my heritage. Yo, and with Mendoza and Mr. Wild, we showing what this about. Phantom driving, your career is disavowed. What's happening, y'all?
Aloha and welcome everyone to another episode of Hawaii's number one podcast, Casanova Podcast. I'm your host, Mikhail Casanova, and I am joined today by a very, very special guest, the one, the only, the CEO of 13AM Games, Alex. How are you doing, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, I'm much more well slept than usual for launching a game.
Awesome.
For what that's worth.
Yeah, it's what is like traditionally like when a game's about to launch, like what is that like? Like, is it super stressful? Is it fun? Is it a mix of all that in between? Or what is it typically like for you?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a maelstrom, you know, of emotions. Because you got, on the one hand, you're super excited to be done with this thing. And mm-hmm. to get it out there finally, because like a game is an incomplete piece of art until people can play it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there's so much work to be done. I like to say the 90-10 rule. You probably heard the 90-10 rule, which is that 90% of the work happens in the final 10% of a project. So it's still chaotic. And then of course there's like the stress. The most stressful part for me is probably waiting for reviews to come out. You know, like, mm-hmm. did people get the game, or did, you know, did it work? Did it click? There's only so much you can do before the game comes out to get that. And then obviously, hopefully, did it sell well? Like, you know, is it, did it make money? But that's also the really exciting part, is when you start to get that trickle of people playing the game and you get to see their reactions. That's mm-hmm. like the best part of making video games, is seeing people play it and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. And for the audience, if you didn't know, the game that we're talking about today is Dawn of the Monsters. It is such an amazing game. I've been playing it. I've had access to it before launch, and I am thoroughly enjoying it. But I'm going to let you talk about it if you would like to give the audience a bit of a primer, and the floor is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to hear you liking it. So Dawn of the Monsters is basically a giant monster themed side-scrolling beat 'em up, but it takes a little more inspiration from more modern action games like God of War and Bayonetta and Ninja Gaiden than mm-hmm. it does the old school ones. And it's got, you know, fully destructible environments. It's got over 35 missions. It's got an augment system where you can increase your character's abilities. It's got two-player co-op. It's got four different monsters you can play as. It's got an in-depth story. Yeah, it's got a whole bunch of stuff going on. We're really excited about it. We've got some really good buzz so far. So we're just pumped to be able to share it with the world.
Yeah, like I've really been having a lot of fun with it. I've had access to it. Well, today is the 10th of March. Man, this year's already flying by.
Yeah.
I've had access to it since last week, I'm gonna say either Saturday or Sunday. And it's just been a game that I've been having a hard time putting down just because I grew up in an era of the, you know, side scrolling beat 'em up, you know, the Double Dragons, the Final Fights, the Streets of Rage, the, you know, just that era. And of course, one of my favorite franchises is the Kunio or Niketsu series. Nice. And it's just like, this game has so many different, like you're saying, like you feel the God of War influence, you feel the Ninja Gaiden and the Bayonetta influence, you know, being able to parry and have augmentations that give your parries and your dodges, you know, stat buffs for like a set amount of time. So you can parry and get a damage boost for like 10 seconds or so, or, you know, you can augment and increase your health and, you know, do rage arts. Like it's so cool, the inspiration of it, because I feel like a lot of times when you see a lot of brawlers that come out or side scrolling beat 'em ups, you know, in modern day, they pay a lot of homage to the classics, but a lot of them stay so traditional to the classics, they don't really innovate as much. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this is cool, this is perfecting what would have come out in 1993, 1994. But where is that additional innovation? And with this game, I'm seeing so much, especially when, like, the story, because beat 'em ups don't typically have very in-depth stories. Mm-hmm. And the story here is really, really good. So, yeah. I'm gushing about this game because it's so fun.
No, I love it. Gush more. It's great.
So, yeah, it's, you know, I'm really enjoying the characters. Each character plays very differently, you know. You know, you got your heavy character with, you know, Megadon, which, you know, especially if you're a kaiju fan, man, this has a lot to love about it. Like Megadon, Ghidnera, Aegis Prime, Tempest Galahad, like the characters are so, and plus their backstories, you know, is just so interesting. When you guys were deciding on the plot, you know, how long did that take to come up with, or what was the founding idea for that?
Well, you know, way earlier in development, I'm trying to remember, honestly, like way, way back before I even knew that we were making a kaiju game at any time, I always loved kaiju. I always loved giant monsters. You know, I grew up on Godzilla and Gamera, Ultraman, King Kong, all that stuff. So a lot of the high level plot details, I kind of already had kicking around in my head as like a kaiju story, but I didn't know what I was going to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really have a plan for it. So when the opportunity came for us to make a kaiju game, I had some high level things that I knew I wanted to have in the story. Mm-hmm. But from there, when we started to develop the characters and the world more in depth, especially once Unai, our writer, joined the project, we kind of sat down and we, pretty early in the process, we did a beat by beat of the entire story from beginning to end. That would make sense, especially with the beat 'em up mechanics, right? Like with the idea that you're going to these different worlds and you're taking out hordes of monsters.
Love the Ghidnera in the background.
Yeah, I got Ghidnera there. I brought Megadon here as well, so he could be Megadon too. Yeah, it was pretty early on in the process that we had the high level concept of the story. And then it was more as we got into development, fleshing out characters, fleshing out world details, lore, all that stuff, the archives, those kind of got built as we were developing.
Okay. And when it came to the point of like deciding the art style, what were the influences for it? Because it has a very strong like comic book aesthetic to it, and I really like that. But what was the deciding factor for that?
So that came from pretty early on in pre-production. We were looking at, okay, how would 13M Games do kaiju? You know, what could we do? And we always want to do something unique. We want to do something different. So even if you don't like kaiju, you might look at this game and go, wow, that looks pretty cool, I'm interested. So what we started to look at, we knew off the bat, we're not a AAA studio, we're not a massive studio. We knew we couldn't do a fully 3D, highly detailed, realistic thing where it looks just like the movies. We knew we couldn't do that. We also didn't want to do that because that's kind of been done, you know. It exists. We want to do something new. So what we looked to were the kaiju movie posters and the feelings that those elicited, because they're really extreme, especially the ones by Noriyoshi Orai. He did a lot of the posters for the Godzilla series in the 90s. So they're really intense. They've got bold, striking colors. They've got very striking lighting. They're filled with action. And we went, okay, we want to take the feeling of these posters. We want it to feel like you're playing a kaiju poster. But we, you know, doing everything, those are like oil paintings, and we can't animate oil paintings. That's a whole other, you know, nightmare to try to do that. So we looked at manga and we looked at comic books to offer a unique art style. So there's actually a lot of kaiju manga, especially in Japan, and there's a lot of appetite for that kind of stuff. So it's a way that we could simplify the characters into something that we can animate while still offering something very unique. So it looks, you know, Mike Mignola was a huge influence on us from, you know, Hellboy and that kind of stuff. And then what we did is we added a lot of the detailing, hatching and that kind of stuff from manga, as well as onomatopoeias. So anytime, like when Megadon punches something or something explodes, it'll have the Japanese comic lettering appear to make the sound effect. So that's how that kind of came together. It took a lot of work, especially in terms of developing the technology for that, for how we light our characters, how we light our environments, but it came together in a way that I'm pretty happy with.
Definitely, definitely. And one of the things with the way the combat flows, like, I know I'm going to keep coming back to the gameplay because I'm a huge fan of the gameplay.
Oh, that's good.
Like, with the it's almost like it's kind of, I'd say, like a free-flowing combat. It's, you know, you got your very clearly influenced by, like, you know, the God of Wars and Ninja Gaiden and Bayonetta, where you got your light and heavy attacks, you got your rush attack. When you were deciding, because most brawlers literally have one traditional attack, and then you can do variations on that based on directional inputs. When you decided to go with that type of combat style where you can have light and heavy attacks, you know, your special attacks and rushing attacks, what was, like, the thought process in that? Because it's really, really good. It's really like I played through enough of the game to, like, get to a point where I'm like, this is really well balanced. It's like eerily, like, scarily balanced, because you don't normally have brawlers that are, like, balanced to the point where, like, you get further in the game, it just becomes like you get the rubber banding effect where enemies are, like, constantly following you, or you know, if you go up and down the plane. But in this one, it's like I didn't run into an issue of, like, balancing, like, or difficulty spikes or anything like that. It felt fair throughout the whole, my whole time with it. But anyway, I'll shut up and let you talk.
No, that's great to hear. That's really great to hear. Well, it comes from, so I'm a huge fan of beat 'em ups. You know, I have been since I was a kid. I remember going to the arcade and playing The Simpsons and Turtles in Time, and, I mean, so many others. So I always loved the genre, and I always loved that it was one of the best ways to play a co-op game, because you don't have to split the screen, you don't have to operate your camera, you can just show up and you can have fun with a buddy. It's pretty easy to hop in. Now, in the grand history of beat 'em ups, it was kind of like, you know, you get to the end of the 90s, you get to the early 2000s, and the genre pretty much just dies. Like, there's games being made still throughout, but, like, they're pretty few and far between. And a lot of people, I remember on the internet, I used to go to a lot of video game forums and stuff. People were like, yo, beat 'em ups are the worst genre, right? And I was like, what?
I remember that.
You remember that, right? People were like, beat 'em ups are the worst genre. And I was like, nah, like, you can't be real saying that. Beat 'em ups are great. But I think people would get frustrated with a lot of beat 'em ups because, you know, beat 'em ups didn't leave, they just evolved, right? Yeah. So they went from the 2D side scrolling, and then Devil May Cry and Dynasty Warriors happened. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, beat 'em ups were changed forever. They looked so different. Some people don't even call those beat 'em ups, but effectively they're beat 'em ups.
Yeah.
So they changed. And what those games offered were, they were saying, let's give you more control. Let's give you more expression. The difficulty isn't getting toned down. We're just giving you more tools to deal with what's coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
And because the 2D beat 'em ups kind of disappeared and turned into 3D beat 'em ups, 2D beat 'em ups never incorporated a lot of those elements. And I always thought, like, why not? There's nothing stopping mm-hmm. a 2D beat 'em up from having Bayonetta style dodging, from having blocking and parrying, from having more intense combo chains, from having a platinum game style ranking system. Mm-hmm. Let's do it, right? So I wanted to bring those elements in, and I wanted to, as a team, we wanted to identify what was frustrating people about beat 'em ups. So one thing for sure was, and this happened to us all, is you know, you can't dodge in a lot of beat 'em ups. You just have to position yourself. And in the, you know, there's a way to play them in old arcade games. You know, there's a way to play beat 'em ups in a way that you can maximize the invincibility frames on a throw to avoid getting hit and stuff, but it's way more complicated than you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
So cheap hits was another one. So, you know, a lot of beat 'em ups, the characters that punch, it might be like 5 frames or something, or even lower. Like, you can't react to it, right? Mm-hmm. And especially with how fast your character moves, you don't have a tool to react to it. So we looked at a lot of these things and we compared them to more modern action games. And we said, okay, well, why don't we give our enemies big wind-up animations? So you can mm-hmm. clearly see when he's about to hit, and you have enough warning to avoid the hit. And let's give them tools to deal with that. They can dodge, they can parry, or they can block. Mm-hmm. And that alone, when we started early tests, was like enough for a lot of people, a lot of even beat 'em up fans, to say, yo, this feels different and this feels good. So from there, it was a matter of how do we create a combat system deep enough to allow for this, and in mm-hmm. terms of the player mechanics, and then how do we design our enemies to encourage the player to use those mechanics? So, yeah, I mean, right from the outset, it was almost like trying to make a game that proves, hey, beat 'em ups are great from 2D perspective. They're great. And like, they don't have to be quote unquote simple. Cause I think a lot of beat 'em ups are more complicated or more deep than people give them credit for, but they don't get to that level. They don't get to the level to experience that depth a lot of the time. And I think that's slowly changing with other indies as well. Like Streets of Rage 4, I think, did a lot of good work. I think Fight and Rage is a really cool one as well.
Love that game.
And they made a lot of changes to how beat 'em ups work. It's a little more traditional than us, but they add a lot of stuff to try to modernize. So my hope is that beat 'em ups continue to not just rely on how the classics worked, but evolve it and learn from those newer games as well, and keep the genre going. Because I love Bayonetta, but like, you can't play Bayonetta 2 players co-op, you know, on a couch. So let's try and keep beat 'em ups alive, right?
I'm glad you brought up Fight and Rage. It's one of my favorite games, and I've had Seba Fighter on the podcast before to talk about the game. And it's, you know, the fact that it was him alone making that game was insane.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's interesting, like, when you look at how the resurgence of the, and not to say, you know, for anyone who's watching or listening when this goes up, not to say that beat 'em ups ever went away. They've never gone away. But the 2D side scrolling beat 'em up genre getting back into the public eye, more into the mainstream, the resurgence of it, I kind of want to say started with the Scott Pilgrim game, just because that's such a big name. You know, like, when that originally came out, and then you had other titles start to follow that over the course of like a decade. And it really, within, I'd say, the last 3 to 4 years, there's been so many beat 'em ups to come out that have just blown people away. And, you know, Streets of Rage 4, that's something, honestly, for, I'd say we're of the same generation, that's something we never thought would ever happen.
Yeah, I'd given up hope. I'd given up hope a long time ago.
So it's like, well, that trailer came out. I remember, I think I was driving. My wife's like, hey, babe, the Streets of Rage 4 is coming out. I was like, what?
So yeah, right. This must be April Fool's.
Right. So it's like, you know, that coming out. And then the game Matt McMuscles worked on, I believe that's...
The Takeover.
The Takeover. That was really good.
The Takeover is tight.
You know, you know, you've had the River Sea franchise being rejuvenated with River Sea Girls, thanks to Way Forward and Arc System Works. And, you know, like, that's been, it's really coming back into the mainstream. And, you know, we got Dawn of the Monsters now. And I'm like, man, this is phenomenal. Like, yes, bring this back. Let the younger generation be able to see, like, this is good, too. It doesn't always have to be 3D, you know, and that's something I guess. You really think about it, like, coming up in the 90s, like when 3D came out, and then every article and every forum was like, oh, this needs to be 3D. This needs to be 3D. Oh, this game is terrible. Like, you look at a lot of games that are, like, so loved and revered now. Castlevania Symphony of the Night. You know, like, a lot of these classics were just, put down by gaming outlets and forums back in the day because they were 2D. But now they're loved down. It's like, man, that push for everything to go 3D was just, it didn't age well.
Not at all. I mean, and that's why, like, mad respect for SNK at that time, right? Because, like, and Capcom as well, because they were still doing 2D. They were doing 3D as well, but they were still doing 2D. Like, you know, I say beat 'em ups dropped off in the late 90s, but one of my favorite beat 'em ups is Sengoku 3, the
Neo Geo game. So good.
It's awesome. And because it came out so much later and because they had so much time, like, it's not, if you play, no beat 'em up from the early 90s does the stuff that Sengoku 3 does with, in terms of, like, attack canceling and special move canceling, super canceling, you know, movement stuff. Like, it's great. But, like, there's so few beat 'em ups with that level of, like, technical skill to them. Maybe like Dengen Makai. I don't know if you ever played those. They're pretty tight. They got like game inputs. Yeah. But there's, I don't know. I just want to keep it going. And the other thing as well is, I remember, like we said, like, people were saying, oh man, beat 'em ups are the worst genre. But a lot of games that people like are, like, effectively beat 'em ups.
Yeah.
You know, like, what the hell is Monster Hunter? It's a beat 'em up. It's a fucking beat 'em up. I'm sorry. You're fighting one monster, but, like, it's a beat 'em up. Get out of here. And God of War. People were like, man, God of War, it's game of the year. It's incredible. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a beat 'em up. No, man, that's not a beat 'em up.
What do you do?
You fight hordes of dudes and you just slash them with an axe. Doesn't matter if you're using a weapon or your bare fists. He uses both. Dynasty Warriors is a beat 'em up. I'm sorry. Hyrule Warriors is a beat 'em up. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. That's the truth. So it's a matter of, like, okay, well, actually, people do like beat 'em ups. They don't always want to call them beat 'em ups.
Yeah.
But that was another thing for us, is like, Dragon's Crown, I think, is a great example. And that game did really well.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's a very traditional beat 'em up in a lot of senses, but it adds a lot of stuff around the beat 'em up formula. Equipment, magic, that kind of stuff. And we wanted to have that in Dawn of the Monsters, where there's a game outside of the game with the augments, the DNA augments, and the shop, and upgrading your characters, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my rant. They're beat 'em ups. Bayonetta is a beat 'em up. I'm sorry.
It really is. And it's kind of funny. Like, when you think about, like, another beat 'em up that is so revered now, and if you got a copy of the game, hold on to it because the value is going up. God Hand, like,
look at how IGN, man.
Oh,
IGN had to apologize. Like they apologized like 10 years later or something for that review.
Oh, I'm wondering, because, like, it feels like they probably couldn't even get past the first level. That game, even if you played it on easy, it was unforgiving, but it was in the sense of, you had to learn the mechanics. And it's something that I'm seeing And I'm trying not to go on a rant. I've been trying lately not to go on a rant when it comes to like outlets and YouTubers, just because I see. I see so much. Like, I understand, like, with the YouTubers, there's the whole clickbaiting thing because they want to be the first to get the video out. So let me throw up footage, but it's actually footage from a demo, not from the final game, that, you know, I'm like, oh, don't buy this game, it's trash, blah, blah, blah. Or I see a journalist talking about a game and it's like, oh, okay, how far? And I'm reading a review. Oh, you didn't play that much of it, but you had a deadline. That's a lot of that that goes on. And I'm critical of it and I get a lot of flack for it, but I'm like, man, when I was growing up, you went to GamePro magazine, Game Informer, you went to, you know, EGM, Edge, Next Generation. Like, you went to these magazines because these people played the games. They were detailed. They could tell you that the fun factor, the graphics, how it controlled, they were detailed. And it's like, at some point along the way, we lost that. And it's like, now it's like credibility is like,
it's hard, man. It's hard to navigate that stuff. Cause, and I talk about this sometimes too, because I mean, I get it. There's too many games coming out right now, so it's hard to have journalists that can play everything. I've even seen some sites like, I think Nintendo Life started this thing where they'll do mini reviews. So they'll be like, hey, this is a game we thought was cool. We didn't have enough time to review the whole thing, but we're going to put out a mini review. It's like, okay, like, at least it's upfront, right? Like, they're honest about it. But yeah, there's some times where, like, I'm also a big fan of old school shmups, right? Like shooting games. And it's not even that they're necessarily off base, but a lot of the times, most outlets that review those, it's like, it's more reliable for me to go to the, find a YouTuber that I know just focuses on shmups and see what they say about it, because they're going to be like, hey, here's what that other reviewer is not even going to think about. Or that other reviewer might complain that the game is short because you can credit feed through it. And it's like, that's not how you play shmup, so it doesn't matter to me. So I feel like there's this idea that there's a specialization of content. You know, you find a Discord about beat 'em ups and you ask them, hey, how's this new beat 'em up? It seems to be reviewing well, but like, what do you guys think? Or this beat 'em up got bad reviews. Is it actually bad, or are people, you know, is it actually good? And they might have a totally different take on it than mainstream reviewers.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I see so much of that. I'm like when something comes out, I'm like, okay, is it really bad or is it just not for you? And that's something I feel like, you know, even when I review games, I'll be honest about it. Like, hey, this game is not for me, but it might be for someone else. And, you know, maybe I'll come back and I'll review it later. Like, okay, what's the recent game that came out? Elex 2. I was very critical of that game, you know, and it's funny because I apparently hit the hornet's nest. People are very angry. They're like, how dare you say this game is terrible? I said, I don't recommend it yet, mainly because of all the performance issues it ran into, the graphics. But it is a fun game. The core mechanics are really good. It's just when the game crashes on Xbox, it crashes on PC, you can't optimize it well. Like, it needs some patches. But, you know, people say, oh, you're just a hater. I'm not hating on it. I'm just saying it needs to be improved, because I like games with deep combat systems, deep lore. I like grinding on certain games, and I like that it has, you know, it's basically Fallout 76 in many ways. Like, that's one, you know, like it's on that end of the rough spectrum, but it has potential. You'll see some reviews where it's like, they'll just dog a game for the sake of dogging it without even telling you why it's bad. You know, like when it comes to beat 'em ups, I saw that happen recently with, was it the, I like to call it by its original title, but let's just say River City Girls Zero. Like, that came out, and I've seen a lot of the reviews for it. I've seen a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, this game is not as good as River City Girls. I'm like, well, it's not a River City Girls title, technically. It's more of a sequel to Renegade or the original Neketsu title than it is, you know, River City Ransom. Like, it's two different styles, and people are saying, like, oh, it's stiff, sluggish, doesn't respond well. I'm like, no. And then I had to go and find, you know, other YouTubers that were in outlets like the Brawlers Avenue. They were like, oh, this game is good. This game is really, yeah, really good mechanics. But to casuals, they wouldn't, you know, they don't know how to talk about that.
Well, and even like, I also get the other side of it where, like, for example, a lot of vintage arcade games, right, they get re-released and you can just feed quarters into it and see your way to the end. And on the one hand, a reviewer is going to be like, hey, this game's short. I'm like, well, you credit fed through. You didn't actually one credit clear it, whatever. On the flip side, that's a problem that I have with those re-releases is they don't encourage you to do one credit clear. There's nothing in the game that says, hey, you know, if you one credit clear this, we'll give you extra characters or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's it's like, well, on the one hand, I can't necessarily blame them, because if they're trying to do a review for your average Joe's just looking for a good game and they get that and they do the exact same thing, then, like, yeah, they're probably going to be upset with the purchase. So it's tough. Yeah. I think that on, especially when it comes to older titles, having the context, but also having the game intrinsically reward you. Like, I think M2 does a great job with this.
Yeah.
You know, where they'll re-release old games, but they'll fill them with like achievements and special modes and stuff that makes it clear, hey, technically this game you can beat in 30 minutes, but there's so much to do, so much to explore, and it encourages you to replay it that you're going to feel like you get your money's worth out of it. So.
Yeah, I think definitely that's something, like, when it comes to making a retro style game, like, replayability really has to be strongly there, because especially if it's short, you know, give the incentive to go back, give additional characters, alternate paths, you know, like, hey, you do this in this level, you know, this will take you to this branching path, and give alternate endings. And that's just, you know, increasing the longevity of it. I know a lot of titles now are starting, a lot of, well, also re-releases of older titles, as well as like a lot of modern older style titles are incorporating online co-op, you know, and that's something that I think is great, especially, you know, given we're in the pandemic now, but how do you feel about that? Do you think, is that easy? Because a lot of people think that that's easy to just incorporate into games, but from the development side, is it really, or is that another expenditure?
No, it's in, I mean, depending on the game, it can be incredibly expensive. And the other funny thing about it, and I brought this up before, and it's a bit of a controversial thing, but like, it's something we wanted to include in Dawn, but it was just so expensive to try to pull it off, and difficult, without like seriously delaying the game beyond a super late date. And the thing is, and this is where it gets a little spicy, because if we've made an online game before, people really want to buy a game that says it has online play. The percentage of people that actually play online play, especially in something like a beat 'em up, like old school beat 'em up, is like, if I showed you the numbers, man, it's shockingly low. And then the percentage that use that feature regularly is even lower. So honestly, if someone's re-releasing an old school game, it's like, yeah, I mean, online play is cool. So if it's a fighting game, yeah, it's got to be needed. But something like a beat 'em up or a shmup or something, it's like, well, instead of putting the money into that, I'd rather you put the money into like putting in a bunch of achievements or extra characters or more content that's satisfying from a single player stuff. Cause it can, you know, you kind of have to judge where you put that development time.
No, I actually heard something similar to that from Delala Studios when they released the new battle, well, the updated Battletoads or the newer Battletoads title. They were telling me something along the lines too, like, people were, you know, bashing them for not including online co-op, but it's like, when you look at the stats, it's like you don't really, you know, it's not that used. And it's, I wonder how, like, how do we get that across to people to understand, like, yeah, you may want that, but you're not, it's not that.
I don't think there's any way to do it. I think that the truth is, a lot of the people who complain are the ones who weren't going to buy the game anyways, even if it did have online.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is, you know, if we wanted to make an online game, then it's got to really be like an online game. Like, you know what I mean? It's just being able to play the game online multiplayer as a basic feature is cool, but it's not going to keep people playing the game for long. So it's got to have that kind of Monster Hunter style loads and tons of content and stuff to come back to and stuff to unlock. And so for a lot of like classic beat 'em ups, it's like, is it really worth it? And I mean, if it's on Steam, you can just load up Remote Play, man. Like it's there. but I mean, I get it. And I would absolutely love to do that for like a Dawn 2 or something. But flip side is, like you were saying with the replayability stuff, you know, with Dawn, we made it, it's 35 missions. It's not a small amount of content. And then on top of that, to S plus every mission is what you can, once you're done, that's the next goal. And we unlock something for every single S plus. So it's not just for like bragging rights, though. I mean, bragging rights is always good. We wanted to get breadcrumb. You give you something for every single time you pull that off, because it's not always easy, especially in the later worlds of the game. So I always like that kind of stuff in games where you're rewarded for going back and replaying and perfecting and bettering yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you also look at how, like, you know, we take the conversation further with like how gaming is played now, like with the amount of titles that are releasing within, you know, a month's time. You can have like 40, 50, 60 titles releasing. How long are people going to really sit and play a game? Like, okay, I want online, but are you really going to play that online? Or do you want to be able to keep coming back over the next 6 months, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years, and be like constantly unlocking something, or patches come through and there's additional content that you can get and play, you know? And it's people aren't playing games as long now as they used to, which is something I'm finding interesting. Like I was streaming earlier, and I was talking to my audience and some other content creators that were in there, and we were talking about that. Like back in the day, yes, kids, like back in my day, old man here, you usually got games 2 times out of a year, unless you found it on sale or your parents felt like getting it for you, or you had the allowance for it. You usually got it on your birthday, or you got it, you know, around the holidays. So it's something you played it and you kept playing it as much as you can, because it's really all you had. And also games weren't dropping at the frequency that they are now. So you had time to sit and enjoy it. But the way it is now, you know, like I saw Wario 64 put out, he retweeted something where some analyst talked about the amount of people that actually played and beat, you know, Horizon Forbidden West is less than 16% of people. You know, people that actually played through Returnal and actually got past the second level is less than like 20 or 30 something percent. So people aren't sticking with games as long. They talk about, I see more people, this is the critical side of me, but I see more people talking about games than actually playing. They complain about games more than they actually play, and it's like,
and I feel like it's either people don't play games as much, or if they do, they just play one game forever. You know, it's like, you know, I'm the kind of guy who, I get pretty, a game can feel stale to me unless it's really hooking me in, and so like I could never. I mean, hell, there are people who are still playing Mario 64.
Yeah.
You know, and they just speed run it and they play nothing else. There's people, and then these games like Fortnite and World of Warcraft and whatnot, people just play those and they play nothing. Like, it's almost like, they're not even really part of like the gaming audience in terms of marketability, because like they don't really like video games. They like World of Warcraft, you know. That's it. They're not going to touch anything else. They're not really interested in anything else. They're just going to play World of Warcraft. And that's something that didn't really exist when we were kids, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, there were games we get obsessed with, like Street Fighter 2 or Smash Bros. Or whatever. We play them a lot. Halo. But, you know, it was always about, when I was a kid, myself and my friends around the block, we would coordinate game purchases so we'd never buy the same game.
Mm-hmm.
So that if we went over to each other's houses, we could trade games, right? So we could always have something new on the go. It's fascinating to see. And then on the flip side, there's people who, you know, they only play like indie games. So they're going through, like, I've got some friends who have already gone through like 25 games this year. They've beat 25 games this year. Goodness. Because there's just so much stuff coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep track. It's hard to make noise and stay above it.
Yeah. And you know, and it's also like from the reviewer standpoint too, like I've tried to explain this to people, like when you get on the side of reviewing games, you're usually 2 weeks before the consumer gets to actually touch the title. You've already played through it. Hopefully you've beaten it or at least gotten halfway through a title before you put your review up, you know, meet the embargo. Don't break the embargoes, because that's a PR nightmare.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I've got friends that'd be like, oh man, let's play this game. Oh, what do you think about this game? Already played, beat it. Here's my review.
we don't need to talk. I already wrote pages. Just read the review.
Like, I did the whole thing already. Like, when did you play it? 2-3 weeks ago, a month ago. Like, I already touched this title. Like, and it's so weird because of, like, there's that disconnect. And I'm seeing now too, like, where a lot of people, they don't even really research games themselves anymore. Like, you know, like for us growing up, we had not only the magazines, you know, but there's also that desire for us to play a game ourselves.
Well, we could rent games before, right?
Yeah.
We lost the ability to rent game, because if I wanted a game, I'd rent it, see if it's good. If I couldn't borrow it from a friend, I'd see if it's good. And if I didn't like renting it, I wouldn't buy it. Nowadays, does anyone rent games? Is that even possible? The best I can think of is like Game Pass, right? Like if it's on Game Pass, I might download it, try it, and then be like, okay, this is great. I just want it on my Switch instead or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, we have to rely so much on reviews and videos nowadays, I guess.
Yeah. And you know, and it's interesting too, because like with that, I try to remind people, even when I do my reviews, it's like, hey, you know, do your own research, you know, because my taste might not be your taste, but I see some people that they swear by whatever a reviewer says. Like, and they won't hear anything else. And I'm like, man, this is a different audience than from when I was coming up. But I understand games are expensive now. You know, people have less and less time. And, you know, access to information is just more readily available now than it ever was before. So it's like, okay, I need to know. Is this worth my time? What are this? What is that? Okay, cool. It's interesting being on the reviewer end of it, you know, and it's... Yeah.
No, for sure. For sure.
Going back to Dawn of the Monsters, one of the things I really like, you know, after you complete the tutorial level, you got the mission select, you got the research and development, archives, you got chat if you want to further along the conversations, archives if you want to dive deeper into the lore of the world. Like, just the options, you know. Of course, I love the augmentations and everything you can do in research and development, but just giving layers of depth to that, to a traditional experience like that right there. I really love that you guys decided to do that, because it's like, it keeps me coming back over and over. Even if I'm playing on the Switch, if I want to go play it on Steam, like which is why I can't wait till I get my Steam Deck, because I just, PC is more my preferred platform. Valve, if you're hearing me right now, I'm in Q2. I need it to be here next month. Please send it to me.
Gabe's going to drive out and he'll drop it off personally, right?
I need to open it. I need to knock at my door and Gabe to be there and be like, here's your Steam Deck. Thank you. Oh, man. But yeah, like just given the you know, you got the 35 missions, you got the augmentations, you've got, there's so many callbacks. Like even when you, if you want to like have different, you know, color skins, like you've got certain ones for certain characters that look like, you know, Ultraman, certain ones that look like characters from Neon Genesis, you know, Evangelion, you know, Kamen Rider. Like it's just, the callbacks are there. And it's really cool and creative how you guys did that. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got a doc. I started a doc that's called All Easter Eggs in Dawn of the Monsters. Because I was like, oh, you know, I never put them all in one place.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much. Like, it's insane. It's insane how many winks, nods, and homages are in that game. So if you're a fan, if you're listening and you're a fan of monster movies, of tokusatsu, of whatever, like, you're gonna be eaten well. take my word for it.
So I guess for you, like, you know, in your role as CEO, like, what is a typical day like for you? Like, what are, you know, from the start of your day to when you finish your work, or even if you have an end of day, like I know in your role, you're probably very busy, like 24/7, but what's a typical day like for you?
Well, it changes a lot. So because we're a small company, I tend to wear a few different hats.
Mm-hmm.
So on Dawn of the Monsters, I was creative director, which is a lot of meetings, a lot of writing documentation, a lot of coordinating different departments, making sure, hey, does this piece of art match with what was written in this story? And does that match with what happens in the gameplay?
Mm-hmm.
But because of my background, my background's in visual art and design, sometimes I'm helping out with art, you know, mm-hmm. doing concepts or stuff like that. Or sometimes, a lot of the time, I'll be helping with design. So designing enemies or designing UI or designing characters, whatever it is. So that's kind of, you know, why it changes a lot in terms of mm-hmm. specifically, you know, quote unquote CEO duties. A lot of that is business development. A lot of that is calls with partners, doing interviews. Recently, it's been doing a lot of interviews, mm-hmm. obviously because the game's coming out. So there, I'd say there isn't a typical day for me, but it starts with me checking my emails, going through a lot of emails, and almost always has a meeting or two in it. And I might do some design work or some artwork if there's a need for it and I'm available.
Okay. So with the fact that this is a multi-platform title, is it hard optimizing the game to work to each platform? I know I've heard other developers say that getting titles to work on Switch is a little bit tricky, but what, from your experience and your perspective, like, has it been difficult or has it been easy to like port it to each platform?
Well, it's been less about the specific platforms and more about what we want to achieve in the game. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're pretty experienced with Switch development, and we've been working with Nintendo since the Wii U 3DS days.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had to fitting a game on 3DS, fitting a Wii U game on 3DS, that was a challenge, but we pulled it off. What becomes tricky for any platform is, for example, in this game, we wanted everything you can touch, you can destroy dynamically, mm-hmm. right? So all the buildings, dynamic destruction, and fully lit and, you know, rendered with all these shaders to make them look like they're in a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
That was tough to do, period. So we had to find out a way to do that without you know, requiring a beefy PC to play this game without requiring you to have a PS5. So those kind of things were tricky, but, you know, we've got a really strong team that's able to just collaborate and figure out, okay, well, we can optimize this from the tech side. We can change this from the art side. We can do this better. We can do this simpler. We can iterate on it. So yeah, there were certainly some challenges, but we were able to get through them and make something that still looked solid. Because even on Switch, we're still running at full 1080p docked, which is something that we wanted to maintain because it's got such a graphic art style that if we lower the resolution, or if we have dynamic resolution, a lot of Switch games do that, where it goes up and down, when you've got this graphic art style, it kind of doesn't look great when it changes on that. So we said, okay, well, we got to lock it at 1080. There's no moon. And same with on the portable 720p full res, because I actually, obviously I've got a decent PC, but I really like playing it on the Switch handheld because it looks really crisp on the screen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you guys have to create a custom game engine for it, or did you like utilize something like Unity or Unreal Engine 4 or?
We use Unity. We did build a lot of custom like systems for this game, so we're not using a lot of Unity's built-in APIs, like their built-in physics and stuff. A lot of it we had to kind of do ourselves. But the advantage to us for Unity is we're really experienced in Unity, and it allows us to put it on multiple platforms with a little more ease.
Okay. And one of the last two questions I have for you, because I know being completely respectful of your time, but what has it been like?
I was like, oh, wow, it's almost three.
What has it been like working with WayForward? I have a lot of friends over there, Ben and Rudis. Shout out to him and to Adam Tierney as well. But like, what's it like working with them again when it comes to this title?
It's been great. Our studios have a lot in common, especially in the way we make games and the type of games we make. And WayForward has been great, not just supporting us from like a publishing and marketing standpoint and all that stuff and support and porting and whatnot, but they've been great because they're developers. You know what I mean? Like they're not a publisher who doesn't make games and only publishes. They understand how challenging it is to make games. So working with them, it's so refreshing compared to working with the regular publisher, because not only are there times where they're just like, oh, here, we recommend you do this instead of that, and they're right because they've made more games than us, they understand how hard it is to make games, and they're a lot more reasonable when it comes to that kind of stuff. So it's been great, and they've really helped make the game better and give really good feedback. And I think it's come together really nicely.
Okay. Cool. And one of my last questions is, what would you like to leave the audience with before we go? Like any thoughts or, you know, what they should expect coming into Dawn of the Monsters? The floor is yours.
I mean, I'm just really excited for people to play it, period. It is a meatier experience than your usual beat 'em up, and it's got a lot more going on under the hood than you might expect. I've seen a lot of beat 'em up players do some pretty crazy combos already, even stuff that I didn't think was possible. And really, if you pick it up, I'd just love to hear what you think. So you can reach out on Twitter at 13am games or come to our Discord or email us. I love to hear people's thoughts and ideas. And I hope that it does well enough that we can keep supporting it or maybe even work on a sequel. So fingers crossed.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's been this time. It's gone by really quickly.
Yeah. Time flies, right? Time flies when you're having fun.
It definitely does. You know, and honestly, I would love to have you back on the show if you'd ever like to come back on and, you know, Absolutely. talk about talk about this or any other projects you're working on, or we can just, you know, talk about gaming from when we grew up, because it's, yeah, it's I feel like that's such an interesting, you know, like I feel like the younger generation can learn a lot from learning what we went through, like as compared to like what they're getting now from gaming. Like we were really, we had to deal with so many games that were just betas that we're like, oh, well, all right, that's interesting.
There was no patch in it back then, man. There was no patch in it.
Oh man, like, oh goodness, like, yeah, the stuff that we had to deal with, and we dealt with it, and we learned. And I know it's like a big conversation now about accessibility and, you know, and difficulty and letting everyone play, but like we didn't have that conversation when we were growing up. Yeah, it's like you have to learn the game or
you're thrown in the deep end. You got cranked and you had nothing else to play, so you had to keep going.
All right. Well, but definitely it's an honor having you on the show. Enjoyed this conversation. And people, make sure you go pick up Don the Monster. It's going to be available on all platforms coming very soon. Probably when the game comes out is when this podcast is going to be releasing. So if you liked it, make sure you know, share it around. If you want to pick up the game, I'll have links in the description below the various platforms. Really amazing game. It is perfect on the Switch. I love playing it. Can't put it down, even though my Switch is like, charge me. No, live. Can't wait till my Steam Deck. Gabe, my Steam Deck, want it next month so I can play it there. And yeah, it's really well optimized across the board. And you guys did a phenomenal job.
Thanks.
And people can find you Twitter, 1380M Games, on YouTube as well. And I'll leave links to everything in the description below. And tell Tom I said hi. I haven't talked to him since I had him on a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, will do.
So with that being said, thank you. And hope you all have a good aloha rest of your day. All for your time for listening to this episode of the Casanova Podcast, and one podcast in Hawaii. If you found this episode to be incredibly enjoyable, informative, or if there's anything you gain from it, or any insight, or you know, anything that's good that you really, really enjoy, make sure whatever platform you're listening to it on, or if you're watching it, leave a comment if that's available on the platform, like it, share it around with someone you think would enjoy it, and give us some feedback, because your feedback is exactly what we need to keep this show going. And if you're wondering what are some ways that you could support the show, we got various ways. We've got Patreon, we have channel memberships over on YouTube, as well as Subscribestar, Ko-fi, and so much more. Links for everything will be in the description of the podcast, so make sure you go check that out. And with all that being said, I hope you have an aloha rest of your day.
Let them know that I'm next level, I'm a whole new kind of gaijin. Yeah, at the top spot, in case you forgot. We the ones that got the block hot, bullet got the shot.